Brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses. Monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
I'm Scott Hansen, host of NFL Red Zone. Lowe's knows Sundays hit different when you earn them. We've got you covered with outdoor power equipment from Kobalt and everything you need to weatherproof your deck with Trex decking. Plus, with lawn care from Scotts and, of course, Pit Boss grills and accessories, you can get a home field advantage all season long. So get to Lowe's, get it done, and earn your Sunday. Lowe's, official partner of the NFL.
This episode is brought to you by Bitdefender, team partner of Ferrari. Visit bitdefender.com to learn more about how Bitdefender supports Ferrari to stay ahead of cyber threats and how you can make your digital life safer. Why did one of the biggest car brands in the world choose Graham Loudon to launch its brand new Formula One team? Because he knows how to do it.
If you're going to do this, you just have to start the team now without the entry, because if you wait for the entry, there won't be enough time to build a team. That decision without an entry is going to cost hundreds of millions at risk. You can't half start building an F1 team. You just got to do it.
After years of work, Cadillac's place on the grid was confirmed at the start of this year. Now the countdown is on. F1's newest team aren't racing yet, but they're already moving fast.
We've got 60, 70 engineers running this entire race weekend, exactly as it would be as if we were competing, except our car is in the simulator in Charlotte. We have massive respect for the teams that we're going to race against. They're hugely skilled, hugely competitive, and partly the way of us showing our respect is the amount of effort we're trying to put in to make sure that, you know, we want to compete with them.
Welcome everyone, I'm Tom Clarkson and this is F1 Beyond the Grid. Back in 2010, Graham Loudon launched Virgin Racing, a team with a small budget, which raced at the back of the grid and was graced by the huge talent of the late Jules Bianchi. Cadillac is a different proposition. Backed by General Motors, they have more resources and they value experience. That's why they chose Graham to run the team and proven race winners Sergio Perez and Valtteri Bottas to drive their cars. Their test driver, IndyCar star Colton Herta, is betting that experience in Formula 2 will lead to a chance in Formula 1, but nothing in this sport is guaranteed. Graham talks about all of that, plus the 3 years of work that has led the team to this point, and the detailed preparations going on behind the scenes on both sides of the Atlantic right now to make sure Formula One's newest team are ready. Graham, it is lovely to have you on the show.
That's very nice to be here.
How is the busiest man in Formula One right now?
Busy. To not put too fine a point on it. Yeah, it's busy. There's a lot of challenges. Bringing a new team in, there's bound to be a lot of challenges, and a lot of problems, but it's all a better class of problem than, you know, the period where we weren't sure whether we'd get an entry or not. So although it's busy, it's good busy, if you know what I mean.
We're 6 months out. I don't want to...
thanks for that. Yeah.
We're 6 months from the first race in Melbourne. Is everything on schedule? How is progress?
It is on schedule. And, you know, I know I smiled a bit when you said 6 months. But we have, right from when we got the entry confirmation back in March, on the walls of all of the offices that we have countdown clocks, counting down to two things. One is fire up of the car for the first time. And the second is the first race in Melbourne. So I'm acutely aware of how many days, hours, minutes and seconds are available to us, because that's the challenge now, putting together, you know, a fully professional Formula One team that we can all be proud of and our fans can be proud of as well in a very, very, very short space of time.
Newer listeners may not be aware that you've been around in Formula One a long time.
Yeah.
How different is this project to the one that you were setting up in 2010 when you started Virgin Racing?
Very different. The 2009 entry process was significantly quicker in terms of the actual entry process itself. But then what happened subsequent to that was a period of intense instability in terms of regulations. And so fans who recall back to that period, you know, there was going to be two different sets of technical regulations, and then there's going to be a cost cap, and then there's going to be a cost cap at 30 million or 40 million, you know, figures that you just couldn't even sort of comprehend now in terms of limitations. And then there was no cost cap, and then there was a resource restriction agreement, and then there was KERS, and then there was options to have that or not. Every single week, it was as if the goalposts changed, and it was enormously difficult to try and navigate. This time, the entry process has been significantly longer, and it was incredibly thorough. And, you know, I'm very proud of everyone involved in achieving that entry, because Formula One is difficult. It is the pinnacle of world motorsport, and so it should be difficult to get into, and it was. But now that we're in, there's a lot more stability in terms of, you know, regulations and the overall platform. And so, to some extent, it's a different challenge this time. But also, Formula One's moved on a lot. And I think, you know, in the last 10 or 15 years, we've seen this big shift from what used to be primarily sporting events, so like a race. You know, you go to a race. Now we go to an occasion. It really is an occasion now. You know, so any fans who haven't been to a Grand Prix live, I thoroughly encourage it, because it's an experience now. There's more than just the on-track action and all of... And don't get me wrong, the on-track action is still fantastic. You know, I'm a F1 fan at heart, and so I love watching these cars. And I just think, you know, I have a real appreciation for it. The sport's grown so much now, you know, with the commercial rights holder and the regulator and the promoters and the teams working together to achieve that. And so just these events are so special now, you know, when Formula One's in town, everyone knows about it. It has changed significantly in that time.
Can you give us a chronology now of getting the Cadillac F1 project off the ground? When were you first approached about it?
Well, it feels like about 3,500 years ago. You know, this project's definitely aged me. But it was probably about three and a half years ago. I was driving the A1 and I had a phone call. It was from somebody whose opinion I respect a lot. And they said, you know, would you take a call from the people at Andretti? They'd been looking to buy a team at Sauber, and that hadn't worked out. And so they were looking to bring a new team in. And the person who called me said, look, you know, I've recommended that you talk to them because you've done it before. And there are very, very few people who've done it. And it's not a straightforward process. And there are certain things that I think contribute to an applicant being successful. And so I said, yeah, sure, you know, take the call. And then I had this really, it was a really cool call, because there were a whole bunch of people on from the Andretti side, including Mario. I think I'd maybe met him a couple of times before, but not, you know, certainly never had a conversation with him. And, you know when you're talking to a world champion, they have a kind of way of talking and expressing things, and just the enthusiasm in his voice about this project. And I explained how I thought they should go about it or whatever. And at the end of the call, I still remember it now, he just said, right, well, that's great, Graham. Just one more thing, you know, just don't let me down. And I'm thinking, well, this is, you know, Mario Andretti, 1978 world champion. This is a guy who raced everything and did it when it was not just difficult, but very dangerous as well. And, you know, thankfully, due to FIA and the commitment from the teams and the commercial rights holder, sport is significantly safer now. But when you have somebody like that saying, you know, I really want to do this, don't let me down, you listen. And so I was motivated from that point and got on board then.
And that was 2022. How quickly did you build up a head of steam from that moment?
Well, I guess I gave two pieces of advice about bringing a new team in. One was, there is an established entry process and you have to take it incredibly seriously. You know, so if you get asked 10 questions, you know, you give 20 answers. If they want one piece of information, you give 100 pieces of information. And so the first piece of advice was, when we submit the entry dossier, it was hundreds and hundreds of pages. You know, we went right down, we detailed what was in every sea freight container that we're going to send, what day that sea freight container would go on a ship, every detail, to demonstrate that you know what you're doing, because, you know, they want people to join Formula One who, A, take it seriously, and B, know what they're doing. So that was one piece of advice. But the other piece was, if you're going to do this, you just have to start the team now without the entry, because if you wait for the entry, there won't be enough time to build a team. But secondly, if you are building a team, it shows commitment and it gives people confidence that you are the right people to give an entry to. That decision without an entry is going to cost hundreds of millions at risk. You can't half start building an F1 team. You just got to do it. And the backers were great. You know, they said, okay, yep, let's do it. And that's when they said, we hired you to advise how we should do the entry, but now we'd like you to start building the team for us. And so that's what we did.
So how much had you spent prior to getting the entry?
I don't know, but it was a lot.
I mean, tens of millions.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, it'll be in hundreds.
So you're being serious when you said hundreds of
million? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's the commitment. There a plan B if you hadn't got an entry?
No, it's plan A. It's, you know, I was totally and utterly convinced that this entry would happen. The thing I was unsure of was how long it was going to take. In all honesty, that got tested along the way, because it took a long time. I just kept looking at the, you know, what are the fundamentals? You know, we're trying to do a good thing here. You know, we're bringing a racing team into the pinnacle of world motorsport, and there are available slots on the grid. You know, there's no downside to this. You know, you have to be able to show you can do it. You know, we're bringing more drivers, more action, more cars. The biggest asset Formula One has is the fan base. And we knew, because we were asking fans, you know, would you like to see this happen? And overwhelmingly, the answer was yes. So,
and that is the added value that the other teams were quizzing, weren't they? When it was being discussed, do the other teams, would they welcome an 11th team? What's the added value right there? You've just said it.
Yeah, it's we're giving the fans what they want, and you know, they're the most important thing that Formula One has. If we don't have them, all of this falls away, all of it. So I was a believer of the project, and you know, yes, it got tested along the way because of just how long it took, but there was no plan B in my mind, because I couldn't see a scenario where this wouldn't happen. It was all good as far as I was concerned.
This episode is brought to you by Bitdefender, team partner of Ferrari. In cybersecurity and Formula One, every millisecond counts. Only the most advanced cars and dedicated teamwork win races on the track, and only the most advanced security technology and elite specialists have the power to prevent, defend, and stop cyber attacks. Technology makes all the difference in who has a clear advantage, where Bitdefender is renowned for driving leading-edge innovation in cybersecurity. Bitdefender helps safeguard the data of Ferrari. They supercharge the cybersecurity team's ability to swiftly identify and respond to any threat that arises. Bitdefender has earned the trust of Ferrari for its commitment to innovation and for being at the forefront of cybersecurity to manage continuous and evolving challenges. Join the millions of consumers and businesses that trust Bitdefender to protect their digital worlds. Visit bitdefender.com to learn more about how Bitdefender supports Ferrari to stay ahead of cyber threats and how you can make your digital life safer.
Brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Still to come, Graham talks about drivers Valtteri Bottas, Sergio Perez, and Colton Herta, and he shares his memories of the late Jules Bianchi. Elsewhere on F1's official podcast this week, you can listen to F1 Nation's preview of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix with me and Jolyon Palmer, and F1 Explains has former strategist Bernie Collins answering your questions. press play on an episode of F1 Nation or F1 Explains right after you finish listening to Graham. Now, General Motors have a great history in American motorsport.
Yeah.
NASCAR, IndyCar, drag racing. Why was Formula One so irresistible to them?
You know, the reality is it's a question for them. But if you want my kind of observation on it, it's maybe two things. One is, one thing I really love about everyone at GM is that they think like racers. They go into these sporting endeavors with real appreciation and a real respect. So they're coming into Formula One with respect. For me, that's born out of people who've been, you know, they've been racing. And, you know, I like sports car. I like all racing in reality, but I like sports car. I love Le Mans. And I was trying to think back to when there wasn't a GM product at Le Mans. And, you know, they've been there with Corvette for a long, long time. And so all of the conversations that we had with GM, I got what they were talking about, because they understand racing and they know it. They don't just dabble in it to sell a few cars or anything like that. They see the bigger picture of it. And as well, you know, Formula One, it is a fantastic showcase for innovation. And the Cadillac history in particular, if we're looking at that brand within GM, Cadillac's got this 120-year history of real innovation, you know, some really innovative kind of things. So there was a real fit with that. And then, not to be forgotten as well, is the fit between the values. You know, so, you know, we in our team, we have mission, vision, values, and you know, we operate to our values, and there's a very, very close fit to how we wanted to go racing. And, you know, I'd like to think that it was a combination of a kind of cultural fit, but also, you know, really appealed to their understanding and respect for racing.
That's GM. You've got two big backers,
yes.
TWG being the other, and Dan Tauris.
Yeah.
What do they bring to the party?
They are just super, super interesting group. They understand sport very, very well. When I say sport, I mean in a really wide context. So their investments span basketball, baseball, Premier League soccer. You know,
are they Chelsea FC?
Yeah. So yeah. There's Chelsea. There's they own the LA Dodgers. The majority owner of the Lakers. You know, and these are big sporting franchises and big household names as well. The vision that they have, largely fed, I think, from the learning that they have in these other sports. The vision that they have for the Formula One team is just incredible. It really, you know, it's really cool. You know, we've often talked about ambitions for the Formula One team, and kind of one of the things that we've said is that, you know, our ambition is limitless, and that's driven a lot by the TWG approach. They've demonstrated in these other sports that, you know, if you have the right approach and the right vision, they're incredibly well resourced, you know, so they're able to invest in the facilities that, you know, a top-class Formula One team needs. But I think more importantly is to bring that vision of just where can we be as a team. And some of the stuff that we have planned, which I'm not sure I can talk about yet, I think is fantastic. And it'll be great for the fans. It involves a lot of investment. But, you know, it's just exciting to be part of.
You mentioned facilities. The race team is based at Silverstone, is that right?
Well, our global headquarters is in Fishers. It's on the outskirts of Indianapolis. And that is a nearly 500,000 square foot development, brand new build, which...
For Formula One?
For Formula One, just for Formula One, only for Formula One. And it's going to have a whole bunch of things surrounding it as well, which I've alluded to just before, which I think will be very interesting for the fans. That's headquarters, and the bulk of the car will be manufactured there over time. But again, you can't build a factory. You know, we got an entry in March of this year. You can't build a factory, hire all the people, put all the machines in, and then manufacture components to Formula One standard, which is like aerospace standard, and be on the grid in Melbourne with that car. It just won't work. So we have a facility at Silverstone, which is a logistics facility. It's also where we have the aero design and mechanical design. The 26 car will be coordinated from there while Fishers is being completed. But over time, the main HQ will be in the US. Silverstone's not just an offshoot, it's a significant part of the team. We have a wind tunnel in Cologne, and then
so next year's car is being The aero is being done at the, what is it? It's the Toyota facility.
The Toyota facility in Cologne is the wind tunnel that we use. So we have exclusive use of that. We've invested a lot of money in it, in the facility there, to give additional functionality. And the aero team working on that are in Silverstone. We make a lot of the wind tunnel model parts in Silverstone. You know, I looked the other day, we'd put 32,500 parts on that model, and that figure's already out of date. So you can imagine there's a lot needs doing on that side of things. And then we're building a new power unit facility in Charlotte.
Back in America, in North Carolina.
In North Carolina. And we also have a resource in the GM Technical Center in Charlotte as well. So it sounds complicated, but trust me, it isn't. We organize the structure of the team specifically to kind of eradicate all of this cross-border thing. There's no silos, there's no sort of thinking of one place here or one place there. The whole team operates as a single entity. And we did a lot of research into how NASA had structured the Apollo missions, and we learned a lot there about managing big groups, technically orientated, where peer-to-peer communication, you know, engineer to engineer, aero specialist to aero specialist, all that, where that communication is maximized across different geographical boundaries. And so we designed the structure of the team along those lines. So it operates as all one team. It just happens. Some teams have rooms and corridors. You know, our corridors are just very, very long and stretch across the Atlantic. But the team operates as a single entity.
I've always wondered why teams don't have bases in Europe and the US. I mean, it has to as well, but because your day is that much longer if it's working properly, isn't it, with the time difference.
It's true. And, you know, we're running a simulation. I'm sat here talking to you in Monza during the Monza Grand Prix. So we're simulating this entire race weekend as we speak.
So what do you mean by that?
So we have an ops room in Silverstone. We have an ops room.
Like a mission control room.
So we've got 60, 70 engineers running this entire race weekend exactly as it would be as if we were competing, except our car isn't on the tarmac here in Monza, it's in the simulator in Charlotte. But every single session, we even simulate the media sessions here so that the drivers are not available for that period of time. Basically, you know, we want to be in a position that when we hit the tarmac in Melbourne, you know, we don't have people introducing each other to each other and saying, oh, hello, nice to be in a new team. Everything's got to be up to speed. So we have this program called Race Ready, and it involves all sorts of simulations. And we have massive respect for the teams that we're going to race against. They're hugely skilled, hugely competitive. And partly the way of us showing our respect is the amount of effort we're trying to put in to make sure that, you know, we want to compete with them. And so that's part of what we're doing.
Who's driving the simulator in Charlotte this weekend? Is it Valtteri or Checo or someone else?
It's not. It will. So the race drivers, we're doing more simulated races for the balance of this season, and the race drivers will be in. But it was too short notice, the driver announcements and everything, to coordinate everything. So we have a roster of sim drivers, and I won't say who's in because we haven't announced all our sim drivers yet. So I know exactly who's in, but I can't say.
Look, we'll come on to drivers. There's just a couple more things about the car and the factory I wanted to ask you about. It's going to be a Ferrari power unit next year, isn't it? Just how much are you getting from Ferrari? Is it just the PU, or is it the rear end, the gearbox, the suspension as well?
No, so unlike other customer teams that they work with, we're taking just the PU and the gearbox internals. So we're building the gearbox casing and everything. We're doing all the suspension, everything. We just take the power unit and the cassette, the internals of the gearbox. It's a very bold way of doing it, but you know, we're building a manufacturer team here. So the last team that came in through an FIA process was Haas, and the regulations were very different then. You could almost take an entire car from someone else. That's changed a lot now. You can take a lot less, but we could still, in theory, take suspension and everything. But at some stage, we've got to design this stuff, you know, to fulfill our ambitions. So, you know, we're taking that step from the start.
So you're designing. Who is manufacturing? While you're building everything up in Fishers and at Silverstone, are you getting help from a Dallara type manufacturer?
It's just a network of suppliers who supply all the other teams, actually. You know, teams do manufacture certain things in-house, and we're gearing up to do the same at Fisher's. But there's a network, you know, across the world of people who manufacture. But, you know, pretty much every team on the grid, I guess, gets their radiators from the same company in, you know, who have a manufacturing plant in Australia and Indianapolis. You know, so we're working with partners in the supply chain as the other teams do, but we're just doing less of it ourselves to begin with because we haven't built that part up. You know, you have to design the car yourself from day one because you have to own the IP. That's what Formula One is. That's how the formula works. But manufacturing can be, you know, that can be something that you build up to. So we've focused on building the design capability first, and then the manufacturing capability will follow.
What is the global headcount now of the Cadillac F1 team?
It's a good question, and I'm not avoiding the answer. It's just changes every day. So we're talking here now just after the 2025 shutdown. I think in the 2 weeks after shutdown, I think we have over 120 joining in the next 10 or 15 days. That's the speed of onboarding.
How do you get them working as a team?
Well,
the reason I asked that, Graham, is that Zach Brown is very quick to tell you that 98% of the people that finished ninth in the Constructors' Championship 7 years ago are still at McLaren.
Yeah.
And it's about empowering the workforce and getting them to work together that has created the force that they are today. So when you have so many people joining, how do you go about making them work as a team?
It's a good question, and you're quite right. It's, you know, it's all about treating people properly as well. You know, so everyone who joins our team gets welcomed. You know, we have a meeting every Wednesday. We physically welcome them to the team, read their name out, tell them what they're doing, and we say, you know, welcome aboard. Yeah, so we start how we want to continue. Teams are all about people, and when we're looking at how you manage big group of people and how you bring them together quickly, the management approach that we've taken, if we think of racing teams, are often described in kind of military terms. You know, people say it's like a military operation and this, that, and the other. And there are a few different ways that military go about organizing things. And one is command and control. You know, you have a central organization. It tells everyone what to do. That won't work in our situation. I don't think it works anyway, but that won't work in our situation. The alternative is what we call mission control, where everybody knows what the mission is, and you just hire the best people you can hire. You make them feel welcome. You know, we want these people on our team. They're wanted by us, and you give them the freedom to do their job. You know, I have got an engineering degree, but I can't go and do some Bernoulli's equation and work out some aero thing or whatever. But we get the best people we can, and we give them the resource, and we let them know very clearly what the mission is, and we make them feel part of the team. It's very easy when there's a small number of you, and this team has grown from a sheet of paper, literally a blank sheet of paper. And so, you know, day one we have one person, two people, three, and it grows and grows and grows. It's very easy to have the tight team spirit when there's a handful of you. The challenge is maintaining that, but I think the approach that we have, where, you know, we make people welcome, we have very clear value set within the business, and we hire people based on those values as well to get the right mix of people, and then we tell them what the objective is, and these are clever people, you know, really, really clever people. So we don't need to tell them what to do, we just need to say, this is where we're going. And that's my view on how you build a team.
What are your values? How do you want to go racing?
So we drill it down to four key values. We have bold ambition. You know, we've said it before, and that doesn't mean, you know, being blasé or anything else like that. But there's nothing wrong with having bold ambition. It's a reflection from GM. They're very bold at the way they go about things. So that's really key. There's excellence in execution. You know, just doing things right. You know, we really focus on that. There's a focus on innovation. So we welcome new ideas, you champion them, you know, building Formula One racing cars is a hugely creative business. I love that creative side of it. And creativity is fed by innovation. So we want to foster that innovation. You know, it's kind of don't shoot down ideas straight away. You know, evaluate them and look at them and everything. And then finally, all one team. You know, we act as one team. No one gets left on the pitch. It's the greatest team game in the world. There's 1,000 players on each side, all shapes, all sizes, all sorts of backgrounds. Diversity is super key. You know, we want differences of thought and what have you. But we're all one team. We act as one team. We look out for each other. We care for each other. You know, what we're going through at the minute is very, very challenging. You know, so we spend time trying to make sure people look out for their workmates and colleagues and, you know, really foster a really, really strong team approach. Because otherwise, all they're doing is just going to work. Formula One's difficult. People sacrifice a lot to be in this sport, so it should feel special. We want people to feel special in our team. So we lean on those four values heavily.
Let's talk drivers. You've announced three so far, not the sim drivers.
Yeah. Or the reserve.
Let's talk about Valtteri Bottas and Sergio Perez, first of all. Why them?
We drew up a kind of list of all of the attributes that this team needs, and they're very different from some of the attributes Mercedes needs, for example, or Ferrari or whatever. And every team is slightly different in any case, but the very fact that we're bringing everything so new into Formula One this year meant that our needs are a real outlier, probably, on what a lot of the other teams needed. You know, and that was lucky for us, because here's two drivers who really fit the bill perfectly, and they're not in other teams, and so it's fortuitous for us. But when we're looking at those characteristics, it's more, you know, they have to be fast, and these guys are, you know, they've won between them 16 races and 106 podiums. You know, also, you know, there's a lot of young people looking to get into Formula One as drivers who are fast as well. But these guys have also experienced a lot of time at other teams. They understand what works and what doesn't work. You know, we don't have to explain what you guys do in the media, but probably fundamentally they understand what's needed to gel a team together. And I think that can be quite a daunting challenge for a rookie coming in. They might go, you know, they might come from an F3 or F2 background where you're dealing with a dozen people. In Formula One, you have 1,000 people. You are the focal point of that. You are the bit that is on TV, visibly delivering. And having people who have been through that before, understand it and know it is super valuable. But as I said before, I don't want to get away from the fact that, you know, we're not hiring non-executive directors here. These are racing drivers and they're fast.
Is it a concern that neither of them is racing this year in 2025?
Yes and no. You know, racing drivers race. That's their aim in life. And when they're racing, they're learning a lot. As it happens, because of the build-up that we have to next year, it's actually semi-helpful that they have a bit more time available to focus on the job in hand. And I don't mean, you know, Valtteri's still a Mercedes driver.
I was going to say,
at the moment,
how amenable is Toto being?
Very, yeah. And I wanted to put that on record, you know, right from the first discussions. Mercedes, who I have a lot of respect for, the Mercedes F1 team, everyone there has been very helpful, but Toto personally has been very helpful in making this happen, and you know that's a good thing. I think, you know, everyone involved with Valtteri wants to see him racing. That said, we have to respect boundaries. Valtteri's not racing their car week in, week out, so he's got capacity now to think about the future, and we can't talk about technical things and this, that, and the other, but we can talk about. It helps. I know Valtteri pretty well. I've been close to him for the last few years, so I've got a good idea of what he likes and what he doesn't like and that kind of thing. But you know, even just having time for those conversations helps a lot. And these guys, they know what they're doing. They'll be back up to speed pretty quick. Checo hasn't had the benefit of being in the paddock the whole time like Valtteri, but again, you know, we've got a program that we're planning to just involve him in a lot more the technical side, because we can, because he's not contracted to another team. So I think, you know, there'll be a catch-up on that side pretty quick.
There are rumours going around the paddock that you're going to have a TPC programme, testing of previous cars programme, in the second half of this year, partly to get the drivers up to speed, but also, you know, to get the pit stops nailed and things like that.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And so you don't have a two-year-old car.
Exactly. So
it's what are you going to use?
TPC stands for testing of previous cars. We don't have a previous car. The car isn't actually important. You know, we're not looking to do this test to engineer something, which is what a lot of the other teams are looking to do at the minute. A little bit like the simulation events that I've mentioned to you. We want the mechanics to get used to the, you know, regain that muscle memory of working with a live car. Doesn't have to be a Formula One car. It's good if it is. Doesn't really matter. If a car reaches a certain age, it's no longer a previous car, it becomes a historic car. So we could be doing some THC testing or whatever. The reality is, I wouldn't get too hung up on whether it's TPC, THC, whatever, or even whether it's an F1 car. What we want is an environment where the mechanics are getting used to each other, learning everyone's way of doing things. And a bit like the simulated race weekends, even just the first simulated race weekend we did was Barcelona. And so I took part in a virtual pit wall, and it was just so interesting listening to the different voices, getting used to them. You know, it's all different from the previous team I'd been with. And you could actually tell where some of these people had raced because they have different kind of radio protocols and this, that, and the other. And, you know, so now we're, you know, we've done a lot of work to get everybody on the same language set and communicating in the same way and everything. And so these test days that we will do are less to do with learning anything about a car. And we can't anyway, the regulations are so different next year. It's just about getting the race team themselves up to speed. And even just, you know, putting all the infrastructure in place, the pit stop stuff and all the stuff in the garage and everything. We do not want to get to Melbourne and for there to be anything, a first time there for anything other than the race itself.
Will you be doing that testing just across the road at Silverstone, or will you actually have a programme of visiting different racetracks?
It'll depend on whether location of whichever cars we're using. You know, because again, the location doesn't matter. You know,
could it be Pembrey in Wales kind of thing?
Yeah, it could be could be anywhere. It could be place in Europe, could be in Spain, could be in Italy, the location doesn't really matter. Ideally we'd prefer stable weather, but yeah, it doesn't really matter. The main thing is everyone together, learning to work together, and you know, just yeah, exactly that.
You've explained the Valtteri and Checo choice very well. I don't want to pour cold water on it, but Valtteri is going to Melbourne with a 5-place grid penalty for his misdemeanours with Kevin Magnussen in Abu Dhabi last year.
Yeah, just a quirk of the regulations, isn't it? You know, just how it is, that kind of thing. I think it highlights, I'm not going to start trying to change regs or whatever, but it does highlight a bit of a quirk in the regulations. I don't think a team should be penalised for that, especially when there's such a long gap after it. But, you know, if that's the interpretation of the rules, so be it.
They're changing it going forward, but there's no mechanism in the regulations to change anything that's happened in the past.
That's the reality of it. We have to respect the regs, otherwise it's not sport anymore. It's pantomime. You know, whatever the regs are, we'll race to them.
Is nationality important to GM?
No, I can't specifically talk on their behalf, if you like, but if we're looking at it from a team point of view, we've always said when it comes to drivers, and indeed everyone in the team, everyone in our team is hired on merit. We try and get the best, you know, the best engineer, the best mechanic, whatever. Everyone's hired on merit, including the drivers. If they happen to be American, then that is fantastic, both for the fans, because, you know, it is something that we know, because we talk to the fans, we know it's something that they want to see. American driver in an American car, ultimately with an American engine in the back. So it's a brilliant thing to have. It's a great thing for the team, because it is an American team. But everyone is hired on merit, because, this is Formula One. You can't go for second best just because it ticks some other box, because you're not going to win. And this is a competition.
If you run your own business, you'll already know that you need to wear a lot of different hats. And you'll often find yourself switching roles from one hour to the next. That's why finding the right tool that not only helps you out, but simplifies everything is so important. And for millions of businesses, that tool is Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform behind 10% of all e-commerce in the US, from household names like Mattel and Gymshark to brands just getting started. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store to match your brand's style. It's packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography, while its built-in marketing and email tools can help you spread the word about your brand and find new customers. Think of it as your commerce expert loaded with world-class expertise for everything from managing inventory to international shipping to processing returns and beyond. If you're ready to sell, you're ready for Shopify. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/beyondthegrid. Go to shopify.com/beyondthegrid. shopify.com/beyondthegrid.
Brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
I'm fascinated by current IndyCar driver Colton Herta.
Yeah.
He's leaving the comfort, if you like, of a very successful IndyCar career at the age of 25 to come to Europe to do Formula 2. And we know the vagaries of Formula 2 and how competitive it is.
Yep.
It's a huge decision in his career. I just love your thoughts on it.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Well, you love the bold ambition to go back to one of your, you know, one of your four sayings.
Fits our values, bold ambition. He's a racing driver. You know, I read very early, there was a kind of, when there was a bit of a rumour of this happening, I read this article and it said, well, you know, it's a big risk to his reputation or whatever. And you're like, the fans want to see this kind of thing, a driver back in his own ability. He wants to do F1. He has the respect for Formula 1 to say, I can't, you know, he could just stay in IndyCar, get some more super license points and then just rock up and try and get a seat somewhere. He's not doing that. Instead, he's like, you know, I'd really love to race in Formula 1, so I'm going to go and learn it. And the only way to do that is embed yourself in one of these teams with 1,000 people and find out how it works. And, oh, and while he's doing that, let's do a bit of racing as well, you know, because I'm a racing driver. I love it. I love it. It's a refreshing approach, you know, so far away from this kind of corporate construct of some, you know, we talk to young drivers a lot, and sometimes you're talking to kids who are fresh out of karting and you would think it was some kind of business plan that they're putting together. I love the raw kind of confidence in his ability.
But F2 really is so difficult. Look at Kimi Antonelli, Oli Bearman last year. They finished mid-grid a lot of the time. And here they are in Formula 1.
Yep.
And Colton is obviously aware of that.
Yes. So one of the first conversations I had with him, because I was thinking, oh, you know, maybe I'm going to have to say exactly what you've just said. And it was the other way around. You know, he started off by saying, well, it'd be good to race something, you know. F2's, you know, it's really competitive. These kids are really fast. And he said everything right. He's got to respect. He knows exactly what he's doing and exactly, you know, what he'd be letting himself in for from that point of view. And I you know, I applaud it. I just think it's so refreshing.
I mean, he needs to get a super license to race in Formula 1. You need 40 points to get that license. He's on 35.
34, I think.
Is it now 30? Yeah. But he could have just carried on an IndyCar, done some FP1s for you next year. You get one super license point for each FP1 session you do. He could have done it. He could have got the license that way.
Yeah.
Did you at any point try and steer him in that direction?
No, because I don't think that's... First of all, I don't think if you want to go Formula 1 racing, that's not the way to do it. And also, there's no given here. You know, if he gets another 6 points, that doesn't put him in our race car at all. nobody races forever. So at some stage, we're going to change drivers and there'll be an opportunity. But there's no given here. This isn't an exercise to just get some points and then we put Colton in. You know, we're constantly looking for, you know, what's best for the team. And it could well be Colton. It's refreshing honesty by everyone involved and a belief, you know, from the team's point of view, but also, you know, very much from Colton's point of view. You know, I think it reflects incredibly well. And it's interesting to see that it's been really, really well received by fellow drivers, the quick drivers. They're the ones who look at this and they go, yeah, this is cool.
Lando Norris said this weekend that Colton is really quick and he has huge respect for what he's doing next year. And he also has huge respect because they were teammates in British Formula 4 back 10 years ago, in 2015. And,
yeah, that's,
you know,
right.
You asked Lando, is Colton the real deal? And he says, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's
very good through fast corners, apparently. Yeah. When he's turning
left. But
we
want him very good through all the corners. And that's what I love. Teams are built on honesty as well. You know, if you lose honesty in the garage, you're in trouble, big trouble.
Cadillac is having an increasing presence on the global motorsport stage. There's obviously what you're creating here in Formula One. They already have a WEC team, World Endurance Championship team. They're winning races over there. How closely affiliated are you with what they're doing in sports cars?
There's an awful lot for the future where we can look to integrate, not just on the GM side, but the TWG side, you know. So under TWG ownership, they own, you know, an IndyCar team, an Indy Next team, a Formula E team, a NASCAR Cup team, a NASCAR truck team, a Australian V8 team. You know, it goes on and on and on. And then on the GM side, as you say, there's, you know, huge involvement in sports cars as well. In fact, TWG have an IMSA team racing a Cadillac as well. So within the family, if you like, there's an awful lot that we can look at in the future. But building the Formula One team, we have to just be so focused on that one thing, you know, just make sure that we have the team as prepared as possible, that we're not, you know, we've got to kind of walk before we run in terms of looking at the bigger picture. But that's certainly all there for, you know, for the future.
Graham, you've had an incredibly successful career, first as a businessman, then of course there was the Virgin Marussia Formula One team. You've raced in sports cars, you've told us about your love of Le Mans. Is what you're doing now the hardest thing you've ever done?
No, because this is business. This is all about creating stuff and it's exciting and it has promise. By far the hardest thing you can do is when something goes wrong in a race car. And sadly, we've had that a couple of times in Formula One when I was running with John Booth, when we were running Marussia, and Jules had his accident in Suzuka. That's the hardest thing by a million miles. A million miles. It's totally and utterly different experience to, you know, to what we're doing here. This is a challenge. Don't get me wrong. It's hard. It's stressful. But it's, I hope the other team principals that we're going to work with never have to be in that position. That's the hardest thing you can do in racing.
How did Jules's death in 2014 affect your attitude towards the sport and towards racing drivers?
There's a lot of things you could answer there on a personal level, but it's probably not the forum for it. The main thing that gave me was the value and the appreciation of a team. For anybody watching who wasn't aware of the situation back then, teams were in really precarious situations. The prize money structure is very different from how it is now. As part of our team, Jules got this fantastic result in Monaco, which effectively secured the financial future of the team.
P9, it was a wonderful moment. It was like you'd won the race. I remember.
Exactly. And it was so important, and we spoke about it a lot at the time, which was the importance of everybody there, Jules obviously included, effectively saving a team. You know, the team went on, the team continued. It had challenges, big challenges, you know, but we found, you know, eventually found a new buyer for it and all the rest of it. And at the end of that process, I was exhausted by it, but it taught me the value and the importance of a team. So if we roll the clock forward now, we went through a very arduous entry process to get this entry. But in my mind, a team is worth fighting for. And I saw how hard people fought to keep a team. And so my thinking was, that's the level that you need to apply to fight to get a new team in. You know, okay, you know, we faced a few challenges along the way and it looked very uncertain at times. Easiest thing in the world is just give up. You know, there's loads more ways you can go and make money, do something, do whatever. But this was a new team is something worth fighting for, in my view. And so I think that experience changed my attitude to the value of a team. It's more than just a workplace. It's so much more. And we want it to be so much more as well. So I get, you know, guess that was a big change in my thinking.
When you think of Jules Bianchi now, puts a smile on your face, but can you just tell us how good he was? You talked about Monaco and the P9. Yeah. He was part of the Ferrari Driver Academy. He always had a smile on his face.
Yeah, he did. Infectious smile on his face, quite mischievous smile. You know, we were never in a position to give him a platform where he could show how good he was against the front-running teams. But when you're running a car, you can see how good a driver is, not relative to the others. You know, in some instances, it was almost like a different formula, the cars that other people had. But you know what the maximum that could be extracted is, and therefore you can gauge whether a day was a good day for a driver or not. And Jules would often surprise us on what he could do. And, you know, look back at that 2014 Monaco race. You know, not many people overtake in Monaco, and he did that move around Raskas. That was pretty impressive. And then a few years later, obviously, Charles Leclerc does exactly the same move, same place. You know, just it was just epic. You know, just a great racing driver. We, as I said, we never had the ability to give him the platform for other people to see, but we could see it. And, you know, it was a tragic loss for everyone, you know, the sport included.
Well, Graham, it's been a wonderful chat. Thank you for your time. I suppose, I mean, this in a way, this feels like such a ridiculous question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Just, you know, what are your goals for 26? Valtteri can't start on pole for Melbourne. We've established that.
Yeah. I'll be Checo on pole then.
Yes. But what would put a smile, if you and I are sitting down in a year's time having another chat, what would you like to have achieved?
When there's a reg change like this, it's very difficult to put a target in terms of, you know, positions or this, that and the other, because we have no idea and nobody does. And if they say they do, they're just making it up. So we have to look at it in a different way. Two things will make me really, really happy next year. One is to have the respect from competition, because you earn that respect. We have respect for the others, that's for sure. You know, these are top teams. So we would like to have reached a position where they respect us, because that's a reflection of doing a good job. And then secondly, we want to execute everything that we do to the absolute maximum. You know, we don't want to make mistakes. We don't want to leave any performance on the table. We don't know where we're going to finish performance-wise, because nobody does. But if we're in a situation where we know we've absolutely, you know, wrung out the maximum that we possibly can and executed a race well or whatever, then I'll be happy. And then, of course, it starts. You know, Melbourne's not the finish line for us. It's the start line. Like everyone else in Formula One, we want to develop at a faster rate of everyone else. And as I said before, there's a bold ambition. You know, the ambition is limitless, and we want to aim for that. We've got the resources to do it. It's not, you know, 95% of my career in Formula One has been cost capped, not by regulations, but by the real world. We're well resourced, and so we want to earn our respect. We want to execute well, and then we want to grow and compete.
Very good luck with it. Now I'm going to end this what I call the traditional way, because I'm asking this question to everyone on the pod this year. We're celebrating 75 years of Formula One. Do you have a favorite moment in the history of the sport that you can share with us?
Wow. That's a question. Oh, there are so many.
Yeah.
And I guess like a lot of, I am fundamentally a fan of this sport as well. Like a lot of fans, a lot of the moments are ones that you read about or read about, you know, so you look at, it's such a rich history over those 75 years. You know, one of my idols, if you like, in this sport is Jim Clark. You know, never met him. My dad used to talk about him, and yet, you know, I've never been to a race that involved. And then, you know, as you wind the clock forward, there are just so many special moments. But I guess from a personal level, it'd be the first time I ever heard a Formula One car live. You know, I can hairs on the back of the neck now.
Where were you?
Silverstone. And I couldn't believe it. I heard it from miles away, like literally. I was walking to the circuit. You could hear this noise, and it just sounded like something from another world. And I just couldn't believe it. And then, you know, when saw a car on track, and they're still super impressive now. The way they change direction and everything on track, that's Formula One to me. That
what year was that?
You know what? I can't remember.
Are we talking 80s, 70s?
80s. I'll have it written down somewhere. I've aged 4,500 years on this project, as I said. That's a long time to think back. But I remember it. I remember the first time I went to European race. It was at Magny Cours. Exact same feeling. I remember walking across this field for what seemed like ages, and all you could hear, you know, were these... Well, it was a Seoul car. You could hear it going round the track. I remember it like it was yesterday. For me, that's the magic of this sport. You know, everything else is built on that, and I'd love it if, you know, if there's even just one more fan gets that feeling from this sport, then, you know, the sport's contributed to something. So yeah, it's not a memorable moment that you can point a video at or anything like that. You know, it's not, I don't know, the Senna Prost things or Michael's stuff, or I remember seeing Lewis, you know, Lewis drove for Manor for a lot of years in the junior formula. I remember his first Grand Prix and stuff like that. All of those are brilliant memories, and it creates the, you know, the whole collage of everything that's brilliant in Formula One. But on a personal level, I think it's that moment where you just think, wow, I don't know what this is, but I want to be part of it. For me, that's the strongest thing.
Graham, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome.
You never forget the first time you see an F1 car in the flesh. And it's wonderful that you, Graham, feel the same way. As well as being a huge fan of the sport, Graham is an expert. He's been around a long time and knows how to deliver under pressure. He's the perfect man to lead Cadillac because he embodies those four core values of the team that he spoke about: bold ambition, excellence in execution, innovation, and togetherness. Graham, good luck with everything, and I, like everyone else, can't wait to see you on the grid in Melbourne next year. If you've yet to see a Formula One car in the flesh, now's the time to rectify that. There's still time to book a grandstand seat at a race this season. Tickets.formulaone.com is the place to go. I will, of course, be back next week with another big name from the world of Formula One. But for now, thanks for listening. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.